You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You are technically more experienced than I.
Wow.
At being on this show. So bear with me, but I think it should go okay.
Okay.
Hello, you are listening to Intuit from Vulture and New York Magazine. I am your guest host, Sean Ramsverum, doing double duty this week, also hosting my regular gig Today Explained. But I'm here filling in for Sam Sanders, who had to go see the Queen in London. Say hi to Beyonce for me, Sam. I'm joined now by Vulture royalty, television critic, Catherine Van Arendonk. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. I can't believe Sam is gone seeing Beyonce and we're stuck here working. Like, what?
That's what I said when I found out what he was actually doing.
Come on.
Take me with you, Sam. How far would you travel for a concert, Catherine? What's the farthest you've ever traveled?
Let's see. In high school, I drove like a couple hours because I was in the Midwest, and I believe that was just to an Incubus concert.
Nice.
It was 2003.
Pardon me.
Yeah. You know, I don't think I've ever done, certainly not like a cross-country flight, but I'm now feeling like I need to like rearrange some life choices, you know?
It's everyone's doing it. I've been hearing about lots of travel for Beyonce, but you know,
yeah,
for the Queen, we travel. I want to get to the game in a minute, but first let us talk about Succession. Have you heard of this show? It's on Max. Have you heard of Max? It's an app that everyone was forced to download last
year. Yeah, never heard of her. No, nope, okay. Absolutely not.
I know you've thought a lot about this show, and you wrote this week that one of the hardest questions that you're left with at the end of it all is, what kind of show was this? And help us understand what you meant by that question. What kind of show?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was thinking back to the very first episodes of Succession. And I was thinking back not just to those episodes, but to the conversations that I remember about them, because there was this real slow boil to the beginning of how this show took over TV discourse. It was not the show to watch from episode one. And in fact, in those early episodes of the first season, a lot of what I saw were people saying, like, I'm not sure I get what its wavelength is. Like, am I supposed to be laughing at it? Am I supposed to be disgusted by it? Is it like a drama that I'm supposed to be following and like really invested in these big plot moves? Or is it really about how these people are, is it like an Arrested Development, everyone's terrible kind of a thing? And in part, that's because it was the beginning of a show, right? Mm. And it, like, there were ways that when you go back, you can see it was pretty locked in from the beginning, but it was not exact, and it took a little bit of time for the show to really find its rhythm. But in part, that's because it was perpetually playing with both of those questions. Like, is this a drama? Is this a comedy? Should you be laughing at these people? Should you be cringing? Should you be disgusted by them? And how does that affect how you're watching this show? Like, should you be tracking all of these little tiny plot details this whole time? Mm. Like, it's all going to come back like Lost? Is this an Easter egg twist show kind of a thing? Or is this really like a sitcom with like idiots hanging out together and I'm watching them all be idiots? And so that was really the thing that I was most curious about, what the finale was going to do, was like, how does the finale negotiate that question? Ends are so hard, and drama ends are so different than comedy ends, right?
Yeah. I mean, a thing that happened in this season for me watching the show that didn't happen as much in the previous seasons is I felt uncomfortable with what the show was maybe trying to say about our reality. This is a show that's always sort of been adjacent to our reality. I would notice the iPhones changing with every season because our iPhones were also changing. But especially on an election night episode, you couldn't dismiss how real this show felt.
Missing. Every vote must be counted.
Yeah.
I think she's right. Well, I think she's right.
Well, yeah, okay, but we can count the votes that we have. However, unfortunately, some are lost, so.
And so I was wondering, you know, what you made ultimately of the line Succession kept between reality and entertainment. Like, obviously, this is supposed to be a family drama based on the life of the Murdochs, but the creator of the show, Jesse Armstrong, has often been at great pains to say that it's really not the Murdochs, it's these fictional characters. But these windows into what a, you know, real life, like, one percenter dynasty could look like have been fascinating to me. And I wondered if you were also thinking about them.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is something that I think about a lot, actually, when I think about stand-up comedy. And this thing that sometimes you will see, hear people say when they realize a comedy special has been edited, or when you discover that, in fact, a joke is not real, right?
Yeah.
The reality of that is that often when people are trying to tell stories that really hit with an audience, when people are trying to create characters that feel fascinating and messy and complicated and feel like our real lives, feel like they're saying something about the real world, it works better. We receive it better when it's made up. The real thing is not shaped the way a story is. Our brains do not receive it as well if you told me the actual nitty-gritty details of the Murdoch's life. You could throw in what I'm sure are horrendous, insane details about Rupert Murdoch, and it would not have the same, it would not land the same way as something like Succession does, because it has been so beautifully crafted to be able to reflect the world back to me in a way that I can actually see more clearly than if it were an actual mirror.
Hey, so FVA is saying they have enough vote reported to call Wisconsin. So Freedom Voice America and Very News are calling.
Great, the Maniacs. Okay. Wow, well, can't get outflanked and we need to be fast, so I think we should call it, right?
Let's call it.
And I think that's one of the things that the election episode does so, so well. I do not believe there was no Wisconsin situation quite like that. I do not believe there was a guy sitting in a room. I don't think Roman was in a room being like, pick Trump or whatever. And yet, this false version of it, I look at it and I'm like, oh God, that's us. That's us. That's us right now. Oh God, oh God, oh God, right? And it can hit you emotionally almost more effectively at a slight fictionalized remove.
We just made a night of good TV.
This is Succession to me.
Nothing happens.
Things do happen.
That reaction you're talking about, that, oh God, that's us, it felt to me like that was the reaction that the coastal states and, you know, federal district might have been having in that moment. But maybe not everyone in the country would have been having that reaction. And that made me wonder, like, who was this show ultimately for? I mean, if you live in a certain media bubble, it could seem like everyone was watching the show. I saw, you know, viral tweets and footage of people like watching the show together in a bar on Sunday night. But the truth was, not the entire country was watching this show.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely not. And never has. It has never been a show on the same popularity level as even some of the other HBO. Like, it does not do as well as House of the Dragon. It does not do as well as, fascinatingly, Yellowstone, which is often called a red state succession. I think that is a vastly oversimplified version of what Yellowstone is. But no, like, this is not a show that that everyone watched. But I don't think that means – I also think it's too simplistic to then say it's like it's just a coastal media show, right? Like, it is it is the kind of show that I have a feeling it found pockets of audience for in a lot of places. And yes, in some places, those people were probably more alone in their viewing than I was in the New York media world, where it was the literal Super Bowl, because also one of the major, like, returning callbacks in the finale was Valter, which is Vulture, by the way. It's Vulture, guys.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
They didn't shout out Vox at all.
But there are not whole country shows anymore. Even Yellowstone. is not a whole country show in the way that Friends was 20 years ago, in the way that All in the Family was 40, 50 years ago. Succession is not, yes, it's fun to say like, yeah, it's a bubble.
Yeah.
Every show is a bubble, guys. It's all bubbles now.
The criticism of the show I would sometimes hear, even in my bubble, was that, oh, I don't want to spend time with these awful people, which I always found interesting because people didn't say that about Arrested Development or Seinfeld or The Sopranos, where the characters were all extremely self-involved or, you know, sadistic or even killers. What was it, because that Succession may have been too familiar a show about something we kind of were trying to avoid? We didn't want to spend time with this evil that we felt was too familiar or something like that? What do you think it was that turned people off?
Yeah, that complaint I also find really, really fascinating. And I think, you know, I think there are a bunch of different possible reasons why it did not come up about those other shows. For one thing, yes, it is about terrible people, but it is not, for the most part, about crime. It is not, for the most part, about murder and guns and, like, the mob and drug dealers, right? And so we, as a TV viewing culture, are very, very acclimated to spending a lot of time with criminals when they are holding guns and shooting each other. And we are much less acclimated to spending time with regular assholes, right? And which is not to say that they're regular assholes, like they're wealthy assholes beyond our wildest imagining. And that is a part of this too, right? That there is, I mean, look, I hate to get all like American culture, but like the bootstraps thing where we treat wealth as aspirational and we would prefer not to think about the idea that the meritocracy is a lie and the people at the top who have gotten all of that money are in fact giant, terrible people. Like, they run the country, and so it would be kind of nice to be able to believe that they were, like, functional and deserved it, right? And so there is a way that Succession forces you to realize, like, oh, no, they're idiots. They're really idiots, right?
They're not serious people.
They are not serious. They're kind of bullshit.
Hey, we are bullshit.
And so I think there is a part of that, but I do think the generic instability, by which I mean like the genre instability of the show, plays into that too. Like when we're watching Arrested Development, it is very clearly telegraphed that we are laughing at these people. And it was always less clear in Succession whether you were supposed to be laughing at them or whether you were supposed to be sympathizing with them. And that is a more uncomfortable position to be put in. Than something as clear-cut as a comedy that is like, I'm a comedy, laugh, laugh, laugh.
All right, more with Catherine Van Arendonk after the break.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I saw this great tweet on Monday. It was some dad texting his kid saying, wow, I can't wait for the next season to see how Tom does. I don't think it's going to work out for Tom. I think he's just a puppet. and whoever was tweeting it said, don't know how to break it to my dad that the show's over. So for all of the people out there with a Succession-sized hole in their hearts, I wonder, Catherine, what shows you've got out there to recommend to fill the void. Should people watch Billions? I hear it's Rudy Giuliani's favorite TV show.
Oh, what a tough question. What a tough question. It really depends what void you're trying to fill, right? Like, if it's Awful Rich People, like, yes, Billions will do that job. But it feels very different to watch Billions than it does to watch Succession. It does not have, it is not interested in the kind of slow burn, like the thing where you feel like you've been knifed and you didn't even realize it until you look down and you're bleeding thing that Succession does. Billions works on a much faster paced, much twistier, it's going to feel more like your standard primetime soap than Succession did. It's really hard to say. The reality is if you like Succession, you are HBO-pilled. And you probably want to be watching other fantastic HBO shows, including ones that are very, very different from Succession. Mm. I watched so many people mourning the end of it and being like, this is the most important finale. And like, for me, the end of a show called Somebody Somewhere, a tiny, beautiful, gem-like comedy on HBO that I desperately hope gets another season, is the thing where I was like, also watch that though. Oh my God, I cried. Mm. I urge you to look for things that do not superficially look the same, but that are made with the same exquisite care of a show like Succession.
Preach. I'm going to watch Dave. I've been waiting to watch Dave. Do you watch Dave?
I'm not a Dave fan, but I'm not anti-Dave.
Okay,
I'm not anti-Dave. I'm a Reservation Dogs person, personally.
Well, thank you for helping us through the ending of what was certainly one of the great shows of our time. Are you ready to play a game?
Let's do it.
You've played it before. But a refresher, the game is called Intuit, Not Intuit. I'm going to read some stories from the week in culture, and you're just going to have to tell me whether you're into them or not into them and why. And then at the end of the game, I'll let you know if you won based on how Great. Much I like your opinions. I've been on the receiving end of this game too, so I'm very excited to now be in this position. You are the only person playing, so it'd be kind of brutal if you don't win, but let's see what happens. We've been focused on Succession, but there were another few series finales this week, as far as I know. Barry, but also Ted Lasso. And I want to ask you if you're into or not into Ted Lasso ending. And I want to ask you because, you know, there was this consensus where it seemed that, you know, this season was a mess. Multiple unrelated, unresolved storylines, inexplicable character actions. That's the word. Into it or not into it?
Oh, I am extremely into it ending because now it's ended. I was not into this season of Ted Lasso. I think it benefited from a pandemic glow, which I do not begrudge it. Like, people need their things when they need their things. That's fine.
Uh-huh.
But outside of that glow and in concert with that, it was like, you know what? People love Ted Lasso. You know what? I bet they'd love even more Ted Lasso. The finale of Ted Lasso is like an hour and 17 minutes long. Like, that's not what this show should ever have been. That is a signal that they don't know what the show was either. It was a mess. I'm glad it's done.
What's pandemic glow? Were people drunk on sourdough starter or something? What happened?
People were like, I'm so sad, you guys. I really need something that's nice. And Ted Lasso in the beginning was that. It was about what it is like to love people and to feel hope. And we needed it.
And I want you to be grateful that you're going through this sad moment with all these other folks. Because I promise you, there is something worse out there than being sad. And that is being alone and being sad. Ain't nobody in this room alone.
And at the same time, it was still a half-hour comedy built on sitcom structures that understood how TV storytelling worked. Now, that last part, no longer true by the end.
Is it really ending, as far as you know? Is this a John Wick situation? I've read that there's some uncertainty about the show continuing. There might be a spinoff. What do you think?
Yeah, that I would also love to know the answer to. And I think it is extremely telling that there has been so little clarity about what this actually is. It certainly feels like a series finale. It also feels like a series finale that sets up one, maybe two different possible spinoff like entries, but it is not that backdoor pilot thing where you're like, clearly it's doing this other character. I think it might end. I really think it might be the end of Ted Lasso. I really don't know if there are going to be spinoffs. I really, really hope that they rethink how it is currently structured if they're ever going to be making more of it.
Okay. Let's leave it there for Ted. Maybe good riddance, Ted. We'll see. Mm. Next up, are you into or not into Amazon discontinuing Alexa's Celebrity Voices?
Alexa, ask Samuel L. Jackson to tell me the weather.
I'm in the cloud, baby.
Not sure if you heard about this.
I have not heard about this. My gut reaction is I'm into no celebrity voices on my Amazon products.
Apparently, you will not be able to purchase the celebrity voices of Samuel L. Jackson, Melissa McCarthy, and Shaq anymore. But soon, Amazon's going to stop supporting them on Alexa altogether. And it's not totally clear yet why they're stopping this, but a report from the Wall Street Journal last year revealed that the company's Alexa sector was operating at a multi-million dollar loss for the past years. Maybe not a surprise, but it sounds like you don't go for celebrity Alexa assistance in your life.
No, I think it is akin to the uncanny valley of Tom Hanks in The Polar Express. And I think morally it raises alarming AI questions about what happens when you give your voice over to giant companies and then they can just use your audio likeness to say whatever the heck you feel like. I find that to be on its own, like in an abstract way, to be a very upsetting idea. I find it in a concrete way to be extremely disturbing to think about any of those people reading me back a shopping list that I've dictated to a thing. And in general, I think probably we should sit down and be like, hey, what's AI doing? Are we all sure this is a good idea? And I don't think this is unrelated to that. So good job to these celebrities who I assume have pulled out of whatever this agreement was.
After making tens of millions of dollars, perhaps.
Yeah, well, look, okay.
Do you talk to any of the robots, the Google Homes, the Siris, the Alexas? Do you engage with them?
I avoid it if at all possible, although we do have some of those objects in our home. The closest I will get is I will dictate the name of a TV show into a little Apple TV remote rather than typing it into search.
Uh-huh. That's your voice. That's okay, though. That's not some celebrity
voice.
That's
fine. Yeah. Yes. And I will ask them. I have kids, and so the kids will want to play Call Me Maybe again for the whatever time. And so I will ask the devices to play it and then they will start playing it. But I don't really ever want to hear them talk. I don't need them to be talking back to me.
So this is tough, but I wanted to ask you if you could have your pick of a celebrity voice assistant, which celebrity you would choose. But it sounds like you would choose Silent Bob or something.
I would choose, you should be at all times reminded of how creepy it is that you're listening to a celebrity. And so I think you have to go like Hal from 2001 A Space Odyssey, just so that you're always like, I don't trust you though.
Alexa, ask Samuel L. Jackson the weather.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore.
I just started talking to Siri. It works out fine because half the time I ask her a question, she doesn't know the answer. So, making no difference. More of The Game with Catherine after the break.
Calling all female runners, it's time to lace up and join Team Milk. Since the 2022 New York City Marathon, Team Milk has sponsored female marathon runners nationwide, providing support and shining a spotlight on their unique stories, perseverance, and drive to go the distance. Why milk? Dairy milk is an excellent nutritional add for both marathon training and recovery. Milk contains 13 essential nutrients, including high-quality protein, making it a crucial component of a training diet. Plus, it's one of the best beverages for hydration, even better than water. The same electrolytes that are added to many of your favorite sports drinks are found naturally in milk. And in 2024, Team Milk is taking the next step to empower female runners by launching the only women's marathon in the U.S. designed for and by women. Built to be accessible, empowering, and community-building, the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon will take place in Savannah, Georgia, on November 16, 2024. You can learn more and register for the marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
Okay, last question, kind of in the same vein, but not really. Are you into or not into the telecommunication company Nokia trying to bring back the flip phone?
Yes. Absolutely yes.
I guess if you're not into the last one, you might be into this one.
Yeah, yeah.
So Nokia has launched a new pink flip phone to entice nostalgic millennials and Gen Z. I guess its phone model was launched last year, but there are more colors now. And there's also a trending comeback of dumb phones with Gen Z.
Yeah.
They're trying to bring all sorts of stuff back. Low-rise jeans, you know.
Not that.
Point-and-shoot digital cameras. You could go for a flip phone with no features?
Not for me. No, I absolutely could not. No, I'm too deep. I'm way too deep. Could never do it. The world will need to end before I put my Black Mirror down. but I believe there should be more options for people who want to be able to have a phone, but also are not as pilled as I am about Twitter, right?
Mm.
I believe we have eliminated too many of the alternatives for living a public life. And I think probably there should be things that are available. I mentioned before that I have children, they need phones at some point. Mm. I don't really want them to have social media. I don't think a flip phone is a bad bridge before their frontal cortex is fully developed, but I need to be able to know where they are. Now, I assume it still takes 20 minutes to send a 4-word text on one of those things. So
no, it's got to be better. They're at least on 2G or something.
Yeah. So given that, hopefully if that's in place, then yes, I'm into the flip phones. Let's do it.
I'm ready to go back to a landline personally. I want a phone that doesn't die. Do you have one of those laying around?
I do not. And I recently realized I probably should, because my oldest child is old enough that occasionally I leave her home for 20 minutes. And I was like, but what happens if the house is on fire? Who does she call? And I was like, I don't know. She better get out of the house. We got to figure that part of it out. I mean, I kind of want, don't you think it'd be cool to have a landline that you never answer and nobody has the number to, but you just know that there's a phone there just in case, maybe?
Totally.
Right?
My mom has one, and whenever I'm home for the holidays, though, she gets tons of spam calls because I think those numbers get listed in a different way. So it really does feel like a good call to have cut that cord, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to use it, but the nostalgia, the cord, my kids don't know what it's like to have a phone cord would blow their minds.
Mm.
It's like in a museum, one of those little curly phone cords.
A new thing to trip over.
Absolutely.
I got great news for you, Catherine. You have won this edition of Intuit, Not Intuit, because I guess the way it works is I agreed with all of your answers. I'm drunk on power.
You know what? Last time I was on, Jesse won. So now he's not here. Suck it, Jesse. I'm the winner now.
I hope this is the beginning of a great streak for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Culturegeist. Culturegeist. You're listening to Culturegeist. Culturegeist. I don't know, y'all.
And now for a segment we're calling Culture Geist. About all the things we can't stop thinking about. The culture that's haunting you, haunting me, haunting all of us. for better or worse.
I'm Allison Wilmore. I am a film critic at Vulture, and I am currently very much in the webbed grip of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man.
Which is gorgeous and funny and heartfelt and also very much half of story. They're not calling it part one anymore, but if you are going in expecting closure, you're not going to get it until next year when they do Beyond the Spider-Verse, so be ready.
Miles, being Spider-Man is a sacrifice.
The animation is just incredible. You know, I half jokingly said after the first Spider-Verse that it made you think that all superhero movies really should be animated. But this one makes you think that maybe all movies should be animated, at least if they're animated like this, in this way that is so kinetic and imaginative and really beautiful. I mean, not to sound unbearably corny, but I absolutely teared up a little at the start of this movie, which picks up with Gwen Stacy and in her Earth, which is done in this watercolor inspired style in pinks and purples. It looks amazing. I mean, catch this movie on the big screen. Be prepared for the to be continued. It really is going to be one of the best looking things you'll see this year.
Hey, it's Anusha again, Vulture's managing editor, sending a dispatch from the land of Riverdale season 7.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock.
So the season finds itself in 1955, if you can believe it.
It's been 2 days since Bailey's Comet almost decimated us, and we were somehow zapped back to the 1950s.
Reckoning with the death of Emmett Till and whether the students should cover his death in the school paper.
A crime emblematic of everything that's wrong with this country. And nobody except my friend Tony and her friends seem to care about it.
They proceed to honor him by reading a Langston Hughes poem on the morning announcements.
Oh, what sorrow. Oh, what pity. Oh, what pain.
So if you were hoping that the show took a turn for the hinged in the 4 seasons since you last watched, I'm here to tell you that you're absolutely wrong. And I can't in good conscience recommend that you check back in.
You all have to make a go of it here in the 50s by doing what you can to ensure, to paraphrase one of my heroes, that the moral arc of this universe bends towards justice.
My name is Gabby Grossman, and I'm a producer on Intuit. This week, my culturegeist is a headline I saw about problematic queen Lana Del Rey. The headline on Entertainment Weekly reads, "Lana Del Rey asks fans to help find her missing vape during concert in Brazil."
You love me!
And you know, I've been to many concerts in my life.
I love you.
And one of the best parts about going to a concert is the unity in the crowd.
And also, if you see my vape on stage, can you find my vape on stage?
And I am so glad that Lana could lean on the people who she loves most and who love her most to support her every need and to find that vape for her.
Where, though? Oh, all the way in the pit?
The spoiler alert is that unfortunately she does decide to give up because the vape, she decides, is too far away. But it's the thought that counts.
Fuck it.
And the fact that her fans were willing to go hard and find that vape for her is just gives me a great deal of hope in this cruel world. And for the record, losing her vape is the second most relatable thing Lana Del Rey has ever done, next to writing songs about soda.
Where, though? Oh, all the way in the pit? Fuck it.
Thanks again to Gabby, Anusha, and Allison. Listeners, do you have a culture geist, a thing in the culture that's been haunting you for days, for weeks, maybe even years? The more specific you are, the better. Just send us a short voice memo, intuit@vulture.com. All right, this episode of Intuit was hosted by me. I'm Sean Ramisvaram. The show is produced by Janae West, Travis Larchuk, Gabby Grossman, Jelani Carter, and Taka Zen. Our editor is Jordana Hochman. Our engineer is Daniel Turek. Our music is composed by Breakmaster Cylinder, and the executive producer of audio at Vox Media is Nishat Kurwa. All right, we are back Tuesday with a brand new episode. Until then, take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.